Welcome to another episode of Managing Change on Internet Blog Talk Radio, your host, Ronald Allen. This is home for truly engaging conversation. Managing Change brings you an eclectic perspective on issues that affect you, the individual, the family nucleus, careers, business, and that entrepreneurial spirit that is uniquely American. And yes, a word or two about life's perspectives on managing change for that human touch that drives us to unique heights of accomplishment. Carve out the time every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. for Managing Change on internetblogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen. Now, also here at www.managingchange2.com. Internet radio at its best.
And good evening and welcome to another edition of Managing Change. I am your host, Ronald Allen. And tonight we have a very special guest because, for a number of reasons. Number one, we've both been through the same business community academy. Many of you may have heard of Rising Tide Capital. It is an 11-year-old nonprofit business incubation center out of Jersey City. And their whole focus, their whole mission is to help startup entrepreneurs, business owners, those that dare, shall we say, to venture past the employee stage and try to create something of their own. And the series that we're starting off with is based on these entrepreneurs coming into different fields, developing opportunities, creating business, and therefore employment opportunities, and are chasing their dream. You know, back in the 60s and 70s, the term the American dream, and somewhere along the line, someone has almost snatched it from us. Well, these people that we're going to be interviewing are the next generation. They are the believers in entrepreneurship. They're the believers in building, creating, developing something that's beyond the 9-to-5. And today's guest is very much in tune with what I did when I first came to this country. Miss Corin Wright, she is the owner, entrepreneur of Style Haven. She is a writer. She is a fashion consultant. She's a business entrepreneur. And she had started this business. She hails out of Mount Clair, New Jersey, my old haunt, my old neighborhood, I could say. She has studied at the Fashion Institute of Technology. I also studied interior design there. While she was also the contemporary department manager at Neiman Marcus. Many of you may know Neiman Marcus has been considered a bellwether of fashion and personal care, where their customer service is second to none. She also wrote for the Daily News Record, a Fairchild publication. For those of you who still understand the significance of writing, the impact that it has on our lives, and certainly that of fashion, she holds two very distinct skill sets. She also is a very enthusiastic wardrobe stylist, so much so that her business, she brings her business to your door, to your office, to your fashion, to your home, and even to events. And that is a very unique aspect of her business. She also studied under and provided services for the Alvin Haley American Dance Troupe. Very intense environment indeed. And many of their designs have gone on to be fashion statements in high society. So I welcome Corin Wright, graduate of the Rising Tide Capital family and business entrepreneur. Good evening, Corin.
Good evening.
Thank you very much for taking some time out and joining us on Managing Change. Absolutely. I want to start off with, where did your passion come for fashion?
Well, I now as an adult, I look back and I see that my passion is, I hate saying that, but my passion for fashion came from my grandmother. My mother's mother was very stylish. She was she's about 5'10", 5'11", so she's really tall. And to me, as a little girl, she was like an Amazon. And she wore fabulous hats to church and suits. And I just love to look at her and see her put together. And I can't tell you the first time I fell in love with fashion, because from the time that I remember, I've always been in love with fashion. I made clothing for my dolls, my Cabbage Patch Kids, and my Barbie when I was a child, and it went from there. So there wasn't one day that I woke up and said, hey, I love fashion. I feel like it was just in my blood.
Absolutely. Now, you are originally from Mount Clair?
No, I'm from Mount Vernon, New York.
Ah, Mount Vernon, New York. So what brought you down into the Essex County, they call it the Oranges of New Jersey?
Well, I came to New Jersey about 8 years ago. Like I said, I'm from Mount Vernon. I went to school in Virginia, and when I came back to New York to look for work, I started working in New York, and when I started making some money, I was living in Brooklyn, and I wanted to buy a condo or a house, and what I could afford in Brooklyn just wasn't cutting it. I didn't want to live in a little tiny box. So I started looking outside of New York City, and I ended up buying a condo here in Jersey, and that's how I ended up here in Jersey.
So you are very much like one of those expatriates back in the 70s and 80s who came into Hoboken, Jersey City, looking for more bang for their buck, certainly an economic advantage.
Exactly.
Fashion, in the fashion industry, you have to put out a good bit of money for style, for fashion, for prints, templates, if you have someone custom design something for you. How do you make your service affordable? And I guess I should ask you, what is your market first, and then how do you make it affordable for your market?
Okay. So I've been in the fashion industry for an extremely long time. I'm only 22. Okay. But that was a joke. So.
Pick up on that one.
So I've been in the fashion industry for at least 15 years. So the connections that I have, I have so many connections, whether it be tailors, where to get fabrics from, stylists, or whatever it may be. I have friends that I've dealt with in connections. So that's the number one reason you can be able to cut costs, is if you have connections, if you can cut out that middleman and know where to get your fabrics from, or where, how to get it made, or to make it yourself. I'm a tailor myself, so a lot of times I don't have to pay someone else to do the work because I can do it, and that cuts out some of the money. The reason I created Style Haven was, like you said, I worked at Neiman Marcus, I worked at Talbots, I worked at The Limited, and I saw, especially at Neiman's and Talbots, I saw the services that they provided to their customers. But most of the people my age, or the people that lived around me, couldn't shop at Neiman Marcus. So they didn't get that kind of customer service. They didn't get to go into the store and say, oh, these pants are too long, and they send alterations upstairs and alter their pants. So that's why I wanted to create Style Haven. I wanted to create something that was affordable to my people, but still you got that same kind of service. And I can provide these services because I have the resources.
Absolutely. A lot of people don't realize that the manufacturers are buying the fabric in bulk in big reams, and then they piece out the work, and it basically a shirt that might retail, and you correct me because I know times have changed, but a shirt that might retail at $50, $60, even $100 might cost maybe $5 or $10, including shipping and delivery and insurances, all those things involved in moving that product from the manufacturing process to the delivery of point of sale. Is that a correct observation?
That's correct. And I get this question a lot because I like to carry unique pieces. So a lot of pieces that are in my boutique, you wouldn't necessarily find in Macy's or Target or, you know, another store like that. But it can be a similar item. So a lot of people are like, oh, why do I go to your store and pay, you know, $45 for this shirt? I can go to Target and pay $20. And the difference is that a store like Target is buying millions of pieces, where so if they're buying millions of pieces, they can go to the manufacturer and get it maybe for a dollar, where if I'm coming and I'm only buying, you know, 300 pieces, I have to pay more. So, again, it depends on the size of your company and the amount that you're buying as to what your cost is going to be.
Well, Corinne, you know, I also looked on your website extensively, and I noticed, and what you said before about your grandmother, she had a style, she had a flair for fashion, looking good, feeling good. A lot of people have to realize that your business is about emotional connection. And that's what I got away from your website. It's an emotional connection. You like rap. You like that flowing, totally loose, but at the same time, certainly not restraining garment. Your fabrics, are they polyester? They don't look like it. They look like, you know, Madras cotton. They look like blends, maybe gabardine, maybe some nice different brushed cottons, even soft wool. Is that part of your business model to distinguish yourself from the, you know, the franchise big box store?
Well, the fabrics are all different types of fabrics. I do have some polyesters. I do have cotton. But that's another benefit to my background and my education, is that I do understand fabrics. I understand the difference between a cotton or a gabardine or a polyester. So when I go to buy and I'm looking at the items that are hanging on the racks or that the designers are offering, I can tell what a quality fabric is and how it's going to sustain, you know, throughout its life. I totally forgot the question that you just asked because I was going on about fabrics and how much I know about them.
No, that's fine. That you are answering the question, because if you have knowledge of what the fabric is, and you, for example, I was always in love with end-on-end cotton, brushed cotton shirts. They're just soft. I also enjoy seersucker shirts because they breathe. They hold the moisture, especially in the summer. So to your point, I understood that. And if a customer comes to you, they're looking, I think they should be looking for that quality of information. So when they do go out in public, in business, and they're presenting themselves, they feel that inner confidence, so they perform that much more, they perform better, they are more confident with their delivery because they just feel comfortable around their fabric. Because that's what fashion does. I mean, make no mistake, it's a, in fact, you need to tell us, How big an industry is fashion?
I mean, fashion is it's an enormous industry. It's incorporated in everything that we do. You don't go into a corporate office without seeing fashion. You don't go. It's incorporated in everything we do. It's in church. It's in work. It's in home. Children's fashion. It's everywhere. So it's a, I don't even know. It's huge.
It is huge. You seem to focus, though, mainly on women. Do you do any attire for men?
Okay, so when I opened the store, I wanted to focus on one at a time. I wanted the store to be a boutique. I didn't want to have everything inside of the boutique. I wanted to really focus on one at a time and then grow. So I chose women. When I first came out of college and I was working in the industry, I started off working at Neiman's. I was in a woman's department, and I'm a woman, and I feel comfortable there. But when I got my first stylist, I worked for a men's magazine, and I fell in love with men's fashion. And I like the challenge of styling with men because it's not very easy. Like women, we have so many options when it comes to colors and fabrics and style. And when you go to men, they have a suit, a tie, and some men, it's hard to put them in color. So you really challenge yourself. And I had a really good time working with men. But then again, when I went to go open a store, I went with my comfort zone and said, let me blow this, and then I can go back to, I can then extend and you know, go with men. So that's how I started focusing just on women.
Tonight's program.
You men out.
Absolutely. Tonight's program on Managing Change, we're talking with Karen Wright. She is the owner-entrepreneur of Style Haven up in Mount Clair, New Jersey. And we are talking about the business, the entrepreneurship that she has been engaged in. As she says, she's an older young entrepreneur at 22. You're listening to Managing Change on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back after this short message.
Why do I listen to Managing Change with Ronald Allen and guests on blogtalkradio.com? Because I get to hear somebody else tell their story that relates to me. Issues, changes, and accomplishments that affect my life. Whether you're experiencing a career change, going through a family discussion about change, or an entrepreneur navigating the changes in your industry, Ronald's guests share their stories about winning. They bring solutions to bear on your issues. They get me answers to today's challenges in life. That's why I listen. Blogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change in Managing Life's Changes.
We're talking with Karen Wright this evening. She is the owner of Style Haven. She's also a graduate of a fine institution called Rising Tide Capital out of Jersey City. This is a small business incubator service. It's been around just 11 years and has certainly weathered the storm of the last 10 years' economic challenges. You know what they say, when the economy is terrible, it is probably the best time to go into business. Karen, you have decided fashion. You've got an incredible background. I definitely want to touch on some of the organizations you've worked with, because I think that gives other entrepreneurs an understanding of the depth of knowledge you need, so that when you do come out on your own, you can bring some resemblance of history, of knowledge of the industry. You've already told us that resources are absolutely crucial. You came out of Brooklyn, you bought yourself a piece of property. Were you able to, as much as you feel comfortable discussing with us tonight, were you able to to negotiate favorable terms on the lease? Because as we know, if it's a short-term lease, the economy changes, it certainly can work against you. And certainly banks want to see long-term leases, because they then can see stable or can track cash flow. Can you address those types of issues?
Sure. For me, I have a standard lease. When I bought my condo, I didn't look at it as, I didn't really plan, to tell you the truth. Like, I bought my condo, and I have money, and I didn't plan on, I'm not going to be making money. But what I did do is I made sure that it was an affordable rate that I could, you know, pay. I didn't go in over my head. And if anything, I figured I can go get a job at a store and I can still pay it, you know. So I didn't do any – I've always been an entrepreneur, so I'm used to hustling and figuring it out. But I took a risk and – realize that God has my back, and I'll work it out. And I've been here for 8 years and working it out and not looking back.
As Jack Walsh says, straight from the gut. Absolutely, Karen, absolutely. and I need to remind you, Karen, you're only 22 years old. So you have a lot of flexibility, or as they call it in economics, elasticity to your ability
right.
to bounce back. Absolutely, absolutely. Let's talk a
Let's do 22 though plus like 78. Yeah, 17.
Okay, now I got you. Okay, I see where you're coming from. Okay, that's the woman's perspective. I do not question it. I'm a happily married man for 22 years. I understand absolutely. Karen, you have developed the business and you decided to go out mobile. Tell us about that strategy. Why did you consider or feel that it was a better strategy than what most designers retail? They open up brick and mortar.
Right. Okay, so I'll go back to the beginning first. I initially started my company back in 2006. And it was an online business. And I actually did sell men's clothing at that time. I sold women's and men's clothing. And it was all emerging designers. And it was just clothing. I was still working for Alvin Ailey. And I was on tour. So I started this website. And I took a little hiatus so that I can launch the website. Came back. Went on tour. I would tour with the clothing that I was selling with me on the road. And the website really went nowhere because I was one website with tons of them. No one knew who I was. And so it really went nowhere. I kept the website, and I knew that I needed to evolve. I needed to do something else to make this grow. So I decided that I was going to leave my job, which I've been there for 8 years. And the only way that I was going to be able to open up a store was to leave the job because I was on tour for at least, we tour about 8 to 9 months out of the year. So we're gone all the time. There was no way for me to open a physical business and still keep my full-time job. So I said, okay, I need to leave my job. And I did that, and I opened a brick and mortar in Montclair. That's when I came to Montclair. I opened that store, and I was there for 3 years. While I was in the brick and mortar, it was okay, but it was very hard getting people into the store. And my store is located on Bloomfield Avenue, and you're from Montclair. And so Bloomfield Avenue is a main street, very big street. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't up at the top where all of the other stores were. I was down, secluded. So it was really hard to get people into the store. I worked on social media. I have the website. And I started vending and taking the stuff out of the store and going to festivals, going doing private parties and doing that kind of stuff, packing up my car and doing that. And I did that for about a year and a half while having the store. And I saw how much money I was making outside of the store, and I was like, well, why am I paying rent, employees, lights, you know, all utilities, and I'm not making the amount of money that I'm making outside of the store? And that's when I came up with the idea of the mobile boutique. And so it gave me the same. I still had a store. I still had something that people can walk into because, see, when I was vending and I was outside, I had just a table. So I still had something that people can go into. I have a fitting room inside the boutique. They can climb in. They can try on. They can get the same vibe as being in the store, but I can bring the merchandise or the store to them. And so I just always say it's not working. You have to figure out how to make it evolve. It's okay to, you know, stop that and start something new.
Who is your market? Demographic, sex, income, interests. Who is your market?
Yes. So I'm sorry.
Sorry, go ahead. You told us before it was females, but the demographics of those females.
Yes. So they're women ages 35 to about 55 years old. Moderate income of at least $35,000, because you have to at least be able to splurge on yourself a little bit. So I know 35 is practically low, but I sell clothing in my store, and you can come in and get a dress for $35. So you can definitely shop there, making that. Some of the services that I offer, like the personal styling, the wardrobe styling, closet consult, are for someone that's a businesswoman, makes a little bit more money, corporate office. Somebody that can actually use those services are usually, you know, corporate people who work in the corporate offices. That's my demographic.
Have you thought of going to corporate HR or EAP and ask, see if you can position yourself? You kept mentioning corporate. That's why you said it about four times in the first part of the program. So I'm wondering, is that a potential market that you can begin to cultivate through the relationships with some of the individuals that you bring your services? You know, it's almost like in training, we've got brown bag lunch, brown bag, you know, chat and chew type workshops. Can you do the same? Do you think you could do the same thing since you're mobile?
I definitely can. I mean, I can do that, and I was doing that without the truck. But yes, definitely with the truck. I did something recently without the truck at a corporate office where they had a lunchtime, you know, they had a couple of vendors in there, and it's lunchtime, and they come down and they shop. And it's something that happens a lot because in these corporate settings, a lot of people, they work all day, every, you know, Monday through Friday, and they don't have time to go out and shop. Or especially around the holiday times, those are huge. It happens at so many corporate offices. They have pop-up shops, holiday pop-up shops, and they don't have time to go out and do that. But I also offer my services to corporate offices because there are times, especially through HR, when they want to talk about the proper way to dress in an office, you know, how to dress with, you know, being stylish but not too revealing. So teaching seminars and such like that, I do that as well.
Absolutely. It's amazing how many times, you know, not everything fits everybody.
Right.
I'll leave it at that.
Right. If it's on a rack, that doesn't mean you can just wear it.
Doesn't mean you can wear it. And when it says one size fits all, no.
That's not true.
That goes both sides. That goes both sides, trust me.
Yes.
Leasing, financing, is it difficult in your industry at your level of sales to get the financing banks interested in your business?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Is it easy to...
What is it like in getting financing or leasing or in your business, in your industry, and at your level of sales? How have you found that?
Are you talking about financing for, like, a loan for your business?
Well, definitely for the truck, definitely for perhaps some inventory you're going to need, maybe some fixtures when you come into the store, when you come into these locations, you need some, you know, display apparatus. So let's say take those three items, maybe some cash flow. So I'm trying to find out and help the business owners understand that each industry has different challenges when we go to the bank.
Right. So the first thing is, if you have a business plan, there's so many resources to help small businesses get funding. Now, when I first opened my business, there may have been a lot of these resources. I didn't know of them. I didn't have a Rising Tide when I first opened my business to, you know, point me in the right direction of all of the different lending sources that are out there. So in the fashion industry, it's just like any other industry. If you have a strong business plan and you can show that your business model works, then you can get funding. I mean, of course, it goes with what kind of money you're making. I, from when I can remember, I've always really been an entrepreneur. So I never got a loan. I didn't go through the loan process. So all the money that is in Style Haven came from my pocket or a loan within my family, like, you know, my mom and dad, like that kind of loan. But I never went to a bank and got funding because I never had a job that anyone would give me funding, if that makes sense to you, if you understand.
No, it's not for you to try and make me understand, because You're going through it. As an entrepreneur, I need to know that these challenges could face me, and then you're giving me answers, and I'm hoping that the people that listen also have that open-mindedness. It's the more information we have, again, back to your point, the resources that you have enabled you to get where you are, and you will continue to grow. You've also had some exposure, and one which I was very fascinated, Lionsgate, which is a movie distribution organization. Were you a fashion consultant? Did you design particular items for particular shows? What was that about?
So with Lionsgate, I was the key wardrobe stylist on a comedy show called White Boys in the Hood. And it was all white comedians with a host who was talent, who is not white. He was the host of the show, and I was the lead wardrobe stylist on that. So Vibe magazine presented it, and Lionsgate was the producer of that show.
Fantastic. Only in Hollywood. We're talking with Corin Wright. She is the owner, entrepreneur, writer, which we'll get to after the next break, on fashion. If you ever doubt that fashion is not important, just step outside and look at those who are fashionably designing themselves through their day to make themselves feel good, to present themselves in the right manner based on what professions they're in. And it's not about necessarily wearing a three-piece suit. It's really about wearing the right clothes for the right job. You're listening to Managing Change. I'm your host, Ronald Allen. And we'll be right back after this brief message.
This is a special series on entrepreneurship being brought to you through a partnership with Rising Tide Capital and ManagingChange2.com. Rising Tide Capital is a Jersey City nonprofit that provides business training and support to small businesses throughout New Jersey. We are proud to be partnering with ManagingChange2.com to share the stories and journeys of entrepreneurs. The business owners featured in this series are all graduates of Rising Tide Capital's Community Business Academy, a 12-week program which provides the knowledge and skill set needed in order to start and grow a successful business. If you are looking to start a business, grow your business, or would like to learn how to get involved, visit www.risingtidecapital.org. Rising Tide Capital and ManagingChange2.com, providing a new perspective on change and the opportunity it creates.
And absolutely, every week on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we bring you an eclectic perspective on the topic of change. We know that you, the individual, as we refer to the id, for the psychologists among us, is where change actually starts. We have to substitute one emotional need or meaning of behavior for another for change to take hold. We talk about multiple leverages, meanings, purpose, efficacy. Tonight's guest, Corin Wright, certainly has purpose. She is in her early 20s. We'll leave it at that. And she's been very successful in the business of clothing people. We know, we talk about clothes that make a person. Many a woman has been instrumental in ensuring that our backs are warm, our beds are made of the best of material, and that we can present ourselves in the right way. Corin Wright has done that. She's a business owner, entrepreneur in New Jersey, for a unique service of coming to you, to your house, to your business, or to an event. I think she's a bit a cut above the Avon or one of those plastic Tupperware events, I dare say. She's had some time in the publishing of or the writing about fashion. Corin, can you share with us some of the work you did for the Fairchild publication when you were with the Daily News Record?
Sure. So when I was working at Neiman Marcus and I wanted to get back into styling, I started looking for work, and I didn't have enough experience. I had a degree in design, but I didn't have enough experience. So I decided to go back to school and attend FIT. And I went to FIT, which is a Fashion Institute of Technology for fashion styling, in order for me to get out there and start interning. A lot of internships I had to be in school anyway, so it kind of worked out for me. So I went back to school for fashion styling, and I got an internship at DNR Magazine, which is the Daily News Record, the trade publication for men. It's the men's version of it's the trade publication, men's version of W Magazine, or WWD. And they were all housed under Fairchild Publications. While I was there, a fashion editor, which is, I was an intern, and I worked under Alex Padilla, and Alex Padilla is now the head of menswear at WWD, and Clinton Kelly is on The Truth. And so they were my bosses, and I worked under them as a stylist. I was there maybe, I was a little older than most interns because I've already went to college and graduated, so I was a little older, though I understood the importance of being there and getting the education that I needed. And when the other interns didn't want to do stuff, I did it. I was the first one in, and I lived at this time in Wingdale, New York, with my parents, which on a commute takes about 2 hours on a train. So I would be the first person in and the last person out. And, I mean, I lived on the Metro North going back and forth. But they saw that in me, and Clinton came to me one day and was like, how would you like to do your first gig? And he sent me to a trade show on my first gig, and I got to be the stylist on a gig, which was like a huge opportunity. And I can say that Clinton Kelly gave me my first paid gig. So being at Fairchild, I didn't do a lot of writing because as a wardrobe stylist or style editor, you don't usually do a lot of writing. You do, your writing is your stories and photos.
See, okay. Were you involved in any production work?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So we did everything from beginning to end. So DNR is pretty small, where W and WWD have tons of people working. DNR has two fashion editors, one managing editor. It was very small. So we did everything from picking the clothing to picking the models to working with the photographer to after the photo shoot was shot, sitting down in creative meetings and picking the pictures, and then putting them in the layout of the magazine and typing all of the descriptions. So we did everything from start to finish.
Can you walk us through a typical nuts to bolts when the industry is recognizing a style? And I understand that even the car industry follows fashion with colors, proportions, some of the size of the button might be similar components to the size on the dashboard of a car, and it gets very, very technical. But can you walk us through how the industry identifies a style and then drives that style so the consumer ends up at those different price points picking that item up?
Sure. So it's usually done by trend. So first of all, there's this, like, color god called Pantone, and when I think of Pantone, I think of, do you remember in The Wiz, and they're at the the castle or whatever it was called, and he's like, and now the color is yellow, and then they all, and the color,
yes,
changes, like now the color is green. So I think about Pantone,
yes,
like that. Each season they come out and they say, this is the color of the season. Like, they just decide this is the color of the season. I don't know who voted on it or whatever, but they decided this is the color of the season. And Pantone goes with everyone. When I say it goes with everyone, when I got my truck and I had to get it painted and I had to bring it, I brought it over to Mavis to get it painted, I told them the Pantone color. So Pantone goes in every industry. So every industry uses the Pantone color chips, and they decide what color is the color of the season. Other colors, but that may be the main color. So now that's the color of the season. And then there's trends. And just like the color guards, there's trend gods. I think that here in America, a lot of our trends come from Europe. I've traveled the world with Albanelli, and the things I would see, like we would go on tour and be in Europe in, you know, July, and I would see the girls wearing knee socks, short skirt and duster coat. And then 2 years later, here it is for fall in New York. So that's how I feel that the trends come over to America, that the designers go and they get their inspiration from just street style. And then they come over and say, this is what we're doing. And when all of the designers band together and say, this is what we're doing, it becomes a trend because they're all showing it on the runway. And then that gets trickled down. So everyone from Gucci will have something, you know, it's fringe. Fringe is a huge trend. The 70s is a huge trend that started last year and it's still, you know, going on now. So Gucci's showing a whole line of 70s, but so is Forever 21. So it's going to be on all different, you know, price levels, just interpreted into, you know, their designs.
Thank you. I really appreciate that because in many cases, and certainly when I was traveling back and forth as a youngster, I saw the same thing from Europe to America, and one trend, which was sparked by a social unrest, in the 74-75, the British pound was devalued, massive recession, massive layoffs, no work, and punk rock was born. But in America, mm-hmm. punk rock was a fashion statement.
Right.
It wasn't so much a social outcry of, you know, you told us to go to school, you told us the economy would be there for us, and it's not. So there you have both social statement and a fashion design, and then, of course, the very basics of clothes, comfort, fit, all of those intrinsic elements that we need as people, as humans, to go about our daily life. Talking about daily life, one of the worst aspects of fashion are returns. How do you deal with that on your scale?
I am actually really fortunate, and I'll say this, and then everybody's going to return their stuff tomorrow, but I'm really fortunate to not get a lot of returns. And I think part of it, knowing your customer and the relationships I have with my customers, most of the customers that shop at my store, I know them, and they're not my friends. It's not like they're my friends and I know them. I know them because they come into the store, and I create an environment. The name of the truck is called the Style Haven Experience, and it's named that for a reason. It's because they come in and they're in this environment, and they come and experience comfort and luxury. So most of the people that shop with me, they know me. I know them. I know what works for them, and I encourage, try this on. You know, this. I think this will fit you. I know what works for your body. And then I buy a lot of clothing that fit different bodies. So I want to buy, like, everything in my store I absolutely love, and that's because I pick it and I love it. So there's nothing in the store I don't like, but I do understand that some things aren't for some people. But if you just go online and you buy something, for the most part, if you bought it online, you probably are going to like it. Returns are part of the business. If it comes back, it comes back, but as a business owner, how can you, you can't prevent them, but how can you turn a return into something positive? Maybe by saying, you know, what is it that you didn't like? Is it the color? Is it how it fit? And if you notice that a certain item is getting returned all the time, then maybe that's something that you shouldn't bring back because that's not your customer. It might be something that you like, but your customer doesn't like it. So, I mean, returns are a part of the business, and it's not something that you can prevent. Totally, but you can figure out how to make them not so much.
In today's world, credit card payments, online, swiping the device on a phone, I don't want to label out any particular company, or mm-hmm. even using a QR code is pretty much standard. What forms of payments do you not receive? Will you not accept payments?
Me, I don't take checks. Like personal checks, but other than that, I take credit cards and, of course, cash. And now, like, it's just so easy to take a credit card, and it's completely safe. Like, every company from PayPal to Square to Intuit, like, every company that has a credit card processing machine that goes on your phone, they're all secure. There's none that, you know, are sketchy. And now, like, the credit cards are coming out with the chip, which, look, even that came from Europe. I remember being in Europe 5-6 years ago, and they all had chips. And we didn't, here in America, didn't even know anything about chips. So we're not only taking their fashion, we're taking their technology. So the chip, there's an added security benefit when using cards. So people should feel a lot safer, especially if you have a chip reader with using their card from fraud.
How far will you go to serve a client driving-wise, distance-wise?
Well, how you said drive, like physically driving? Like how far?
Yep.
Or
physically, how far will you go? You're in Mount Clair. What's your radius of direct service?
Well, it depends. It depends because I do so with the private party. If you're within a 20-mile radius, there's no charge for the party. It's amount of sales. So the host that is hosting the party gets benefits. It's just like a Tupperware party. Like you get benefits for me coming. So if I come to your party and you sell $200, you get a certain benefit. $300, you get a certain benefit. So within our area, within our 20-mile area, there's no minimum. But once we get further, there is a minimum. So if it's and I have different levels. So say it's a 40-mile radius, you may have to sell. You have to guarantee $300, and then so on. And that's because it costs. Look, it costs me $34 by itself just to go over to George Washington Bridge. So it costs to bring the truck out. And that's just the toll, not the gas. So it costs to bring the truck out. But there's no direct cost out of your pocket to bring the truck. So if your party is popping, we're coming.
Okay. We have a caller online. We're going to ask them to please provide your name and your city where you're calling in, and to ask your question to Corin. Caller there at 1-853. You're calling in on Managing Change, Blog Talk Radio. Okay, they dropped the call.
They got shy.
That's quite they got a little shy. They can text, by the way. You can send an email to ronald@managingchange2, that's numeric2.com. Unfortunately, tonight we were not able to open up the chat line, which is a blog board. You know, every now and again we have these technical issues. Just because our company name is Managing Change doesn't mean we always do it to the level that we would like. At the same time, our guest tonight, Corin Wright, she is the entrepreneur, owner, writer, producer of Style Haven. I say producer because when she goes out with this very unique service, which, by the way, many years ago, as I mentioned, I did graduate with an associate in interior design from FIT. Don Gear was one of the first interior designers to offer Middle American home service. We actually went out in New York to people's homes. It was an expensive service. It was not cheap. But they had a number of consumers who just wanted that level of service. And that reminds me of what Corin is doing and some of the overlap in terms of our interests, the desire to be entrepreneurial, taking some of these challenges and addressing them accordingly. You're listening to Managing Change. You're Ronald Allen. Every Tuesday and Thursday evening, we bring you an eclectic perspective on the topic of change. We will be right back. She is also a graduate of the Rising Tide Business Academy. This is an 11-year-old small business incubator that provides technical assistance and support, classes, which I myself have gone through. I find that the ability to spur entrepreneurial interest and support those who dare to branch out, despite all the obstacles and challenges. Yet the rewards certainly outweigh those challenges. When we talk about small and mid-middle market companies, you have to consider those who are just fledgling, just starting out. Once you hit that 5 to 10 year mark and you're still around, you're still making some money, you're able to feed the family, you're able to pay those operating expenses, and as Karen has shared with us today, you have built valuable resources. Let's talk about those resources some more, Karen, because I think many people always focus on just the money. And it sounded to me, by the level of enthusiasm, money was not just the only thing that allowed you to survive. Can you share with us some other areas, whether it's bartering, whether it's trade, whether it's holding off on payments, what different forms of payments? What have you done? What have you seen that others in your industry have done to build their business?
Well, definitely relationships are a big thing. I first saw as a stylist how people work together to create something. For instance, as a stylist, you have to create a body of work. So it's crazy because you want to get hired. You really, like, I don't have anything to show because I've never been hired, but I really can do this. Well, you have to create a portfolio or something to show that you can do it. Most people aren't going to just hire you as a stylist because you said, hi, I'm a wardrobe stylist. So you have to create something. And it goes for, it's the same thing that happens for makeup artists, hairdressers, and photographers. So a lot of times what we call a test, and a test is, no one's getting paid, but we all need this picture for our portfolio. And so they're all working together for free to get something that'll make them money in the future. So the photographer is shooting for free. The makeup artist is doing the makeup for free, the hairdresser, and then the stylist. They're all doing the work for free, and the model as well, because models need the same thing. The ultimate goal is that we all need this tear sheet to put into our portfolio. So I first saw that in styling, how people work together for a positive outcome. And I use that now in business. If I need something and I can't afford it, there might be something that I can offer the person. Maybe it's a service. Maybe I can, you know, do a service. I can help them out with something else in terms for them giving me something. So you have to think outside of the box. Everything isn't always about money, but it is about money because everybody wants to make money, but everybody doesn't have a lot of money. So maybe you can, you know, I don't know, if you're great at web design, maybe you can help them build their website while they're, you know, helping you, they're providing you with some product to sell. Or, for instance, if you have a store, when I first opened the store, I didn't have a whole lot of product. But I did a lot of consignment, and that meant that I took in a lot of smaller designers, and I didn't pay them for their merchandise until it sold. So they were looking for somewhere to sell their stuff, and I was looking for merchandise. So you have to kind of think outside of the box. And I didn't keep that same concept forever because I didn't make a lot of money doing consignment, but at least I got the merchandise on the shelves. And it got me to a point where I can then afford to buy my own merchandise.
You do a lot of blending and mixing different styles, different fabrics. I love the Scotch plaid jacket top for women that you have on your website. Will there be a time, do you see a time in the future that you will actually design sets of clothes?
As soon as I get some employees. So that takes some time. I went to school for fashion design. I didn't know about any other career. I just knew about fashion designer. And I wanted to be a fashion designer. And when I came out of school and I saw, not that it was hard, but like not, okay, well, not impossible either. It's not impossible to become a fashion designer. It's not, everything is hard. It, you know, every career is hard. But I just saw how much I had to do. And then I realized that there were, like, tons of careers in the fashion industry that I didn't know about, and I can still design. So when I found fashion styling, I was ecstatic because I was like, wait a minute, I can shop for people. Because I'm a stylist doesn't mean I don't get to design. I still get to make things. And in the store, I still make things. And that same picture that you're looking at, well, with the plaid jacket, the scarf that I'm wearing, I made. So I still get to make things. I just make them on a smaller scale that I can control it. I make the candles that are in our store. So I still get to be creative with my hands and make things, but I don't have, per se, a clothing, a line. And I like it that way.
We have our caller back. We're on Managing Change on Blog Talk Radio. Caller coming in from 1-853. Please give me your name and the question to Corin. Good evening. Good evening, caller. You're coming in on 1-853, calling from 1-853.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening. Can I get your name and where you're calling in from, please?
My name is Shar, calling in from Newark, New Jersey.
Good evening, Shar. How are you?
I am well. I wanted to ask Corinne about the process of her truck and how that came about, because that's a very unique idea.
So the what exactly are you talking about with the process?
The idea of the truck and how did you decorate it?
So the truck idea, I spoke on that a little bit earlier about how I was in the store, business wasn't coming into the store, I wanted to get stuff, I was going out and vending, and I decided to launch the truck from me packing up my car and going to different events, and I said, why can't I create something and build a boutique inside of a truck, like a food truck? When I was little, we had bookmobiles. So bring the product to the customer. So I did that. And the traditional Corinne fashion, I did everything myself, meaning everything in the truck is done the DIY, did it myself. My dad helped me build, we built the walls, we built the, I painted all the furniture, we put up the bars and everything in the dressing room. Everything inside of the truck was built with my hands, my dad's hands, my mom's hands, anybody's hands that we can get on, you know, that would help out with that. If that, does that answer?
Yes, that's kind of cool.
Thank you.
That's an excellent, thank you very much, caller. That's an excellent example of resources that you would otherwise have to spend a lot of money mm-hmm. in detailing a truck, in you know, building out the inside, the walls, etc. So that's a perfect example. Thank you very much, caller, for calling in asking.
If you check out my YouTube channel, if you go on my website, click on YouTube and check out my YouTube channel, I have a video of us and building it out. And that was very important to me. With us doing it, one, the money, it saved us a lot of money because we did it ourselves, and it just was a family bonding thing that I really enjoyed, you know, working with my dad and putting stuff together, and it makes you feel like you built something and put something together, and it felt really good. It feels like a part of the family.
You certainly did, Corin. When you talk in that fashion, you bring the other aspect of managing change to the table, and that is the human side of what we do. We know we want to go out there and make money. We know we want to build a business. The low denomination is we're doing it for family. We're doing it for legacy. We're doing it because we want to pass on something. And it's not like, by the way, Corin, you actually did it, so I really appreciate it. You sharing that with us and the question
Thank
to be. Corin, I know we're coming to the end of our program here, and I know you've got 1,001 things you've got to do tonight to get ready for your next series of events. What can you share with business entrepreneurs, people who are on the sideline, people who are on the fence, people who have been around 4, 5, 6 years, you've been around a while, you're still building out your business. You've reached out to organizations such as Rising Tide Capital. You've benefited from their technical assistance, benefited from their community of camaraderie. What can you share with us that business owners can take away from your experience and your perspective?
Sure. I would first say never stop learning. You never know enough. And even if you think you know enough, there's somebody in that room that could help you, that can be a resource. So always, if you have the time, take a class. You don't have to go and enroll in a degree program, but take a class in things that you might feel like you're lacking in. And always reinvent yourself. If something is stagnant, meaning that you might just be making enough money, that's not enough. Like, reinvent yourself and you know, keep growing. Turn that idea that you have into reality. And if it doesn't work, stop it. Like, it's okay to make a mistake. Then you won't make that same mistake again. Try something new. And, you know, whatever works, works. I'm a true believer in there's no right or wrong way. I can't even, if I wrote a book, it would probably be all the things that people tell you never to do. But it did, and some of the things worked for me, and some of them didn't. And then that didn't work, I didn't do anymore. But the things that worked, I kept and I developed them. So go with your heart. And the biggest thing is resources and meeting people, because the people that I've met gotten so far. Like, I've gotten so many free things or free resources just because of who I knew.
Karen Wright, owner, entrepreneur of Style Haven, fashion consultant, bringing the business to your door. Thank you very much, Karen, for your time this evening.
Thank you.
This is a special series on entrepreneurship being brought to you through a partnership with Rising Tide Capital and ManagingChange2.com. Rising Tide Capital is a Jersey City nonprofit that provides business training and support to small businesses throughout New Jersey. We are proud to be partnering with ManagingChange2.com to share the stories and journeys of entrepreneurs. The business owners featured in this series are all graduates of Rising Tide Capital's Community Business Academy, a 12-week program which provides the knowledge and skill set needed in order to start and grow a successful business. If you are looking to start a business, grow your business, or would like to learn how to get involved, visit www.risingtidecapital.org. Rising Tide Capital and ManagingChange2.com, providing a new perspective on change and the opportunity it creates.
You have been listening to Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen, on Internet Blog Talk Radio, with guests providing their perspectives about you, the individual, the family nucleus, your career, your business, and your entrepreneurial spirit, life's perspectives about managing change. Join Ronald and guests every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. for another episode about managing change on InternetBlogTalkRadio.com. Remember, the program is now showcased on ManagingChange2.com, where you can search for your favorite guest interview or get in touch with them and start a chat, enter their forum, or start your own public or private group to engage others in managing change. Catch Managing Change Internet Blog Talk Radio.com. Search Managing Change every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Be seeing you.